Perhaps you have never heard of Michael Goldhaber. I know I hadn't until this past week, when on Thursday I read a piece in the New York Times titled, "I Talk to the Cassandra of the Internet Age. The Internet Rewired Our Brains. He Predicted It Would." In this article by Charlie Warzel, Goldhaber is called an internet prophet, someone who back in the mid-1980s envisioned the internet's effect and the present world that would come about. He saw that in the future, there would be the complete dominance of the internet, increased shamelessness in politics, terrorists co-opting social media, the rise of reality television, personal websites, oversharing, and online influencer culture. In addition to these now ubiquitous conditions that exist in our everyday lives, Goldhaber also envisioned the near destruction of our ability to focus. A former theoretical physicist, Goldhaber was obsessed with how much information was available, something he called an information glut. He understood that there was more access to news, opinion, and entertainment than any one person could take in and handle. He realized that human attention is finite, that in fact, and in his own words, he says, it is one of the world's most finite resources. This information glut, with so many vying for our limited attention, contains a danger for us. Goldhaber says, and I quote, "I kept thinking that attention is highly desirable and that those who want it tend to want as much as they can possibly get. When you have attention, you have power. And some people will try and succeed in getting huge amounts of attention, and they would not use it in equal or positive ways." Unquote. Goldhaber worried that power gained by attracting people's attention would lead to inequity in our world. Those getting the most attention may not be the ones who are making our world a better, more just place. Focusing on people clamoring for our attention can draw our focus away from correcting inequities and improving this world. Every time we focus our attention on a particular action, we divert what precious little attention we have from other things. In paying attention to one action, we ignore the others. And so this serves as a caution for us, as a reminder that we need to be careful and intentional on where we focus our attention and on how we are spending our time. Goldhaber observes this, and again I quote, "It's not a question of sitting by yourself and doing nothing, but instead asking, how do you allocate the attention you have in more focused, intentional ways?" Unquote. He suggests that this is true with the large issues that are confronting us now, things such as income and racial inequity. It is important to deliberately focus our attention and our resources on those things we truly value. Only by doing so can we adequately respond to the injustices of our world in positive and concrete ways. If we allow ourselves to become distracted by everything that seeks our attention, we will not make positive changes. Understanding how our online life has changed us, not only explains our present reality, but also has important implications for our spiritual lives as followers of Jesus. Discipleship is about where we focus our attention, about what we value, about whom we listen to. Discipleship requires intentional and disciplined actions. To follow Jesus is to avoid succumbing to the competing attention-seeking distractions of our society. In today's gospel, Jesus shows us how to be intentional in making choices. He is being sought out by the crowds. Now, we heard last week how Jesus was in the synagogue where he offered a new teaching, a teaching with authority, and he had power. The people were amazed by this and by the fact that he uses that power to cast out an unclean spirit that had taken hold of a man. This act reveals the power Jesus has to heal what alienates and to restore people to wholeness. Because of this, the crowds come to Jesus that night and they seek healing. So many great crowds gather to see him. Before dawn the next morning, Jesus is alone in the dark in a deserted place and he is praying. While Jesus prays alone, Peter searches for him. Peter is in action mode, thinking, there are crowds to be healed. We have to find Jesus. Now, our English translation does not really adequately translate the Greek. In the Greek, Peter and the others are astonished that Jesus could be alone praying when so many people need him. There's work to be done. The Greek implies that they look for Jesus. They want to find him so they can restore him to his senses. Peter has a different understanding from Jesus, and from that understanding, he is questioning Jesus' behavior. He assumes that Jesus should respond to the crowd's needs. Jesus, however, is clear that healing in this place at this time is only one part of his ministry. He has come to preach and to teach, to move from place to place, not be confined to one location or to only one home. So rather than going out to meet all those crowds looking for him, Jesus tells the disciples they are moving on to the next place. They're going on to other places where people are hoping for healing, where people are looking to receive his teaching. Throughout the gospel, Jesus balances time for healing and time for teaching. And he balances it with time for solitude and prayer. He balances time with crowds, time with his disciples, and time by himself alone. Jesus intentionally focuses his attention. He doesn't simply react to all around him, to all the demands for his attention as they are presented. He instead keeps his focus, not allowing himself to become distracted by all competing for his notice. Jesus offers us an example of how we can live in the midst of our busy lives, how we can live in this time where there is so much competition for our limited, precious attention. Jesus reminds us to seek balance, a balance between work and rest, between activity and times of solitude and quiet. Jesus reminds us how important it is to heed the Ten Commandments by setting aside 24 hours each week for a Sabbath time, a period of prayer, rest, solitude, for activities that feed and nurture us and our relationship with God. Given how limited our attention is, everything that is trying to capture as much of that limited attention as possible, it is so important that we regularly step back, that we take time to look at our lives, to examine where we are, to take stock of how we spend our time, what activities we engage in, to notice where we focus our attention. This is, I think, a perfect opportunity for us as Lent begins. Lent is coming soon. Ash Wednesday is February 17th. And in these days between now and the start of Lent, I think it's a good time to reflect on where we are in our lives, and including to reflect on how we focus our attention. This reflection, examination, and prayer in these coming days might help us discern our Lenten disciplines and practices this year. It might help us refine our understanding of those things that we will do in Lent, or those things we will not do in Lent. It might be a time for us to discern Lenten practices that help to restore and strengthen our relationship with God, our neighbor, ourselves, and creation. Jesus asks us to be the focus. No, he doesn't. Jesus asks that he be our focus, that we shift our focus away from ourselves to him. But thankfully, he also gives us the power we need to let go of distractions and to follow him. We see this in the very first section of today's gospel. In that part of the passage, we're reminded how Jesus comes to set us free from whatever draws us away from the love of God, draws us away from anything that gets in the way of our abundant life, this abundant life that God desires for us. The account tells of the healing of Simon Peter's mother-in-law. This is, however, much more than a simple healing account. When Jesus heals Peter's mother-in-law, lifting her up by the hand, he does much more than restore her to health. By healing her, Jesus reveals his power over the evil forces of this world. He shows that he has the power to set humanity free from whatever possesses us, from everything that keeps us from the love, the life of God. Jesus can lift us above the forces of this world that sap our attention, that distract us, that prevent us from following him. Mark tells us that once the fever leaves her, Peter's mother-in-law begins serving those in the house. Now, this might sound like a familiar story. This unnamed woman is healed in order to wait on the men to feed them dinner. Mark, however, is telling us something much more profound than what may be obvious, especially in our English translation. The Greek word translated as serve as diakonia, from which we get our word in English, deacon. This word is used in Mark's gospel only 3 times, and all of them refer not to making food for people, but to servanthood, to discipleship. Diakonia appears in today's account of the healing of Simon Peter's mother-in-law, also in chapter 10, when Jesus says that he has come not to be served, but to serve. And in chapter 15, at the end of Mark's gospel, when the women from Galilee are mentioned as those who follow and serve Jesus, who come with him to Jerusalem, remaining with him while he is killed and buried. These women are faithfully with him after the male disciples have abandoned Jesus. Mark begins his gospel with the story of Simon Peter's mother-in-law and ends his gospel with the account of the faithful women who serve, who embrace the servanthood of Jesus, living as true disciples. No man in Mark is ever referred to as a servant, as a disciple, with the Greek word diakonia. Only women are. In a society like the society of the first century, where women were not valued, Mark says these women are the faithful followers of Jesus. They are the true disciples. The service of Peter's mother-in-law is not about serving dinner, but instead about living the life to which Jesus calls her, about being a servant in the church that gathers in her home, which is very reminiscent of the early Christians who gathered in Mark's day in house churches. The mission of the church, Mark is telling us, is to open our hearts, to welcome those who desire to be set free from all that alienates and oppresses. We are called to be a community that offers the restoring, healing love of God to all people. And Jesus comes to set us free from anything and everything that prevents us from following him. Jesus comes to liberate us from all those clamoring for our attention. And Jesus gives us the power to say yes to his invitation to discipleship. Jesus sets us free to follow as his disciples, to live lives of prayer and loving service, lives in which we seek not our own will, but God's will for us. As followers of Jesus, let us strive for balance in our lives, finding a gentle rhythm of action and working for justice. Let us intentionally set aside times when we retreat into solitude and quiet, where we can encounter God's presence, where we can discern God's call to us. Renewed and strengthened by these times of prayer and quiet, may we then move from them to times of action, where we faithfully follow Jesus as he calls us to loving servanthood, to diaconia, by loving all people, especially the least and the forgotten, especially those who have no voice that commands the attention of others. May our attention always be focused on Jesus and his way of love. May we always welcome all people and serve all in his name. And may we always be the community liberated by Jesus to be his disciples, accepting the liberty of his abundant life. Amen.